Okay, so
it's very appropriate that as we end this semester, as we head towards the end, that we have this group of sugyas that we talked about, because it really puts a very fine point on a lot of what we've been talking about, kind of puts a ribbon on it, and allows us to see things in a holistic framework. So to kind of recap a little bit some of our main points from yesterday, but also to take it a little bit further, and to also see how this sugya is going to directly connect with one of the other two that we want to finish before Zman is over. So the topic here essentially has been kavana. As we said, that katan is not really our topic as much as it is reflective of our topic. And we want to figure out what exactly is the obligation or lack of obligation of kavana when it comes to shechita. What does that say about shechita as a mitzvah? What does it say about it as a meaningful act? Or alternatively, what does it say about it as simply a technical act, that maybe the Torah is only concerned that we only eat animals that were killed in a certain way? But as long as we know that that's the case, it doesn't really... sneezes are challenging. Okay. As long as we know that it was killed a certain way, maybe we don't really care much about the intent. Keeps you guessing. Okay, so just to also re-emphasize and maybe reframe a point from yesterday a little bit. So we mentioned the Dor Revi's question about why we should let katan shecht in light of the position of the Rambam that shechita is a mitzvah. And if you're not capable of being in fulfillment of a mitzvah, shouldn't that bother us? So it's helpful just to restate that point also because of what it reflects about the whole concept of kavana and mitzvos in general. So we talked yesterday a little bit about how kavana and mitzvos is itself a machlokes, is an issue that is repeatedly present in all the generations and not fully resolved. And it's worth just considering how this particular sugya maybe is reflective of that. That when it comes to shechita, so if it's possible that shechita is a mitzvah, so why should it be okay to have a katan do it if a katan is not able to fulfill the mitzvah? So yesterday we also considered the fact that there was a machlokes whether you need to be a bar zvicha. Is there such a thing? Does somebody need to have a connection to the mitzvah of shechita? And if so, how also can we countenance a katan shechting if you don't have to be a bar zvicha? And perhaps, ironically, maybe depending on how you understand it, the Rambam, who is one of those we know does say shechita is a mitzvah, but the Rambam is also the one who does not, as far as we're aware of, have a concept of a bar zvicha. He doesn't mention it. He explains the psul of Akum in a different way. And some of the Achronim explained that he rejects the whole idea of a bar zvicha specifically because how could a katan be acceptable? So in light of the Dor Revi's approach, an important ha'ara emerges that the Dor Revi said in Achanami that because of the mitzvah component, you should not have a katan shecht. And if there is a capable adult nearby, then that capable adult should shecht. And it must be that what we're talking about here is a situation where the adult is not confident in his ability to hold a knife straight or the like, is not able to physically carry it out, even though he knows what's going on and what's necessary and can supervise, but he can't be the one to do it for whatever reason. So only in that case. So then better to have the cut and shecht than nobody. You don't have to give up on the whole meal. You can have the cut and shecht in that case if there's no possibility of fulfilling the mitzvah. So not being able to fulfill the mitzvah doesn't mean that you have to pass up on the whole opportunity. But clearly, if you can fulfill the mitzvah, so then that's the proper way to do it. And the Gemara that's focusing now on whether the Shechita will be messed up or not, that's a more fatal issue. That if the Shechita is not done properly, then the meat's not going to be kosher. So then it doesn't matter whether you have an alternative or not. It's not going to work. So basically, there's two levels to consider this question. On the one hand, whether the meat is simply shechted properly or not, which is a crucial issue. And then the issue of whether the mitzvah is being fulfilled, which is also important, but you could live without it if there's no alternative, if there's no way to fulfill the mitzvah. So then that's the context in which the katan is being considered. In other words, you would need both from different levels of concern. You'd need to have somebody confirm that the shechita was done properly, and that without it you wouldn't have a kosher animal, a kosher shechita. And also not have an alternative, because if you do have an alternative, it would be a bitul aseh, or at least a lost opportunity, which would not be appropriate. So to consider that in the framework of kavana in general, so when it comes to kavana and mitzvos, so even if you say mitzvos ein srichos kavana, so everyone agrees that kavana is a maila, and everyone agrees that you're better off with kavana. And there are even some who go so far as to say what I guess would be a big chumrah, that even according to those who say mitzvos ein srichos kavana, all we mean is that a mitzvah can be accomplished without kavana. So if you perform a mitzvah without the kavana, and there's a chiyuv, so the mitzvah is done. But to say that you fully are accomplishing what you're meant to accomplish in Shemayim, or to say that you get the full Schar HaMitzvah, so that's not the case. So that's pretty scary, because that means that even to say Mitzvah Sein Srichos Kavana means that there's a real loss there, that really it's just a minimal level of saying the Mitzvah is done, but the Kavana really cost you something. So, just finish that point and take a question. So, that could be parallel here, that could work very well with, let's say, this point to the Doravi and the Rambam, that essentially the Rambam, the fact that he holds it's a mitzvah, but yet holds there's no din of a bar zvicha, that doesn't have to bother us, because he's saying that as far as the mitzvah is concerned, mitzvah ain't srichos kavana, or this mitzvah doesn't need kavana, because the mitzvah is accomplished. The shechita is done. It's a kosher shechita if it was done by somebody who's not a bar zvicha. There is no requirement of a bar zvicha. But what the Doravi is filling in here is that l'chadchila, l'shitas Rambam, there is a requirement. And this would parallel one understanding of how we relate to shechita as a whole. Now, it's also interesting to note, and we'll flesh out here, that when we look together in a minute at the Gemara and Daf Lamed Aleph, that it's very possible that our whole sugi here is not about Shechita uniquely, but is really about mitzvahs in general, which is interesting, because one could have easily drawn certain distinctions, but that's something to keep in mind, and how this may plug in to a larger discussion of what mitzvahs are about. So I think Levi was up first. Sam? Yeah.
When you say that, like, doing a mitzvah without kavanah, all that would happen is that you wouldn't be, it wouldn't be considered that you were mavatal the essay? Like, is that, like,
well, it means you're mavatel something, actually, because you're not getting the full.
Like you'd be tater for whatever bonus you would get for being mavatel on a say, but that's it. Like, you wouldn't get any credit, let's say.
Well, or somewhere more in between that, because you, let's say if there's an obligation, so let's say you have to eat matzah on Pesach night. So if you ate matzah without kavana, okay, you did it. You don't have a further obligation to eat matzah. But there's something very much missing, that maybe the schar or other spiritual elements of the mitzvah are not going to be associated with you. You're not going to have that component. But it was checked off the box. Now, it's interesting, if you want to follow up the way you're phrasing it specifically about the distinction between not being punished for a bittul mitzvah but not getting schar, it's really a different sugya, but it's evocative of a chiluk that Merches Chinuch makes about mitzvah habavi aveira, which is a different focus. That there he suggests that mitzvah habavi aveira would mean, let's say, he talks about in the context of sukkah, that mitzvah habavi aveira would mean that there's no schar mitzvah for eating in such a sukkah if a sukkah was stolen, but it's still a sukkah, so it's not like you're eating outside a sukkah where there's a bittul asay, and it's like you're eating in your living room. That it's not, because mitzvah habavi aveira, what that means is that you cannot claim schar for a mitzvah that was done through an aveira, but the aveira technically is done. So in that sense, Levi parallels the distinction you just made, even though it's about a different concept. And then in terms of sukkah specifically, there's an extra pasuk that goes further, but that's the theoretical way he understands mitzvah habavi aveira. So one could draw a comparison. One could say mitzvah habavi aveira means you can't get schar for a mitzvah that you did through an aveira. And some might say that mitzvahs without kavana are similar. You can't expect any schar for a mitzvah that was done without kavana. But here, just to take it a step further, let's say in a mitzvah where there's something that needs to get done, so we'll say, all right, it's done. And let's say in the case of shechita, we'll say, okay, the animal is kosher, and the shechita was done effectively, but it could be that there's no schar mitzvah, which should have been there if one sees shechita as an active mitzvah and not simply a technical requirement. Hi.
I just want to clarify the last point you made with the Rambam Dorvi, in terms that you said that even though the shechita is a mitzvah, that we don't necessarily need kavana, we don't
required
by Zvicha. I know you said
something
right after that.
Yeah, no, so you do need kavana, but maybe you do need kavana,
right.
But or maybe the mitzvah should be done by somebody who can fulfill a mitzvah. So if you're going to have a cut and do this, right, you're going to be missing something big, right? So therefore, it says you should not have a cut and shecht. But there's two different considerations about having a cut and shecht. One consideration is that you're missing a mitzvah. Okay, so that's only relevant if you could do the mitzvah. So if you have somebody there who's capable of shechting and is an adult, then that's the way you should do it. But if you don't, so then there's no possibility of fulfilling the mitzvah one way or another, so we're not going to say you have to miss out on this meal. You can have the meal without the mitzvah if there's no possibility. So what's that kind of scenario? So let's say you have a grown-up who can supervise, but he's not able to shecht personally. He can't hold his hand straight. So that's one kind of consideration. So, but what the Gemara is addressing is a more crucial consideration that is separate from the bittul hamitzvah. Maybe the animal's not going to be kosher. Maybe the cotton's going to do a bad job. So that would be something which not going to matter whether there's an alternative or not. It's simply not going to be kosher. So then you need to have somebody watching in order to address that. So what we're saying is that what emerges, we put all those parts together, is that when it comes to shechita, let's say according to the Rambam, it needs to be done as a mitzvah, l'chachila. But if it's not done as a mitzvah, it's still effective. So that could parallel a question of kavanah and mitzvahs in general, at least according to some who see it that way, that some who see a mitzvah not needing kavanah. And here, we're not talking about whether you shechted with kavanah or not. We're talking about whether the person who shechts is a person who could have kavanah. So it's a little bit of a rough parallel, but it still goes to that question of the presence of kavanah or not. But there are those who understand that mitzvahs, in general, it could be that l'chachilu you need kavanah, and without kavanah, maybe it's a very big loss. Maybe there isn't even any connection to the mitzvah at all. But the mitzvah is done. So mitzvah ein tzrichus kavanah would mean the mitzvah is done. So here too, when it comes to shechita, ein tzrichus kavanah, and therefore in this case we don't even need someone who could have kavanah. It could be a katan. But all that will mean is the shechita is kosher. So it doesn't have to bother us that, oh, it's Davka the Rambam who said that shechita is a mitzvah, but also doesn't require a bar zvicha. Because it's not really a contradiction that, yes, ideally he would require a bar zvicha. He doesn't bring the din because it's not ma'akev. But ideally you should have a bar zvicha. But it's kosher without it. So lemaisa, there's no din of bar zvicha that disqualifies the shechita. But certainly the mitzvah does require that it be done by somebody who knows what he's doing. knows and is aware of what he's doing. So it's important also to bring in the sugya on Daf Lamed Aleph, which really adds a whole other dimension to what we're talking about here, and will help us to appreciate also how this is going to connect to the other sugya that we want to get to. We have a sugya in between, but ultimately we have a sugya after that that's going to connect to this. So appreciating that connection is important. So here, the Gemara in Daf Lamed Aleph, and the Mishnah Daf Lamed Aleph, tells us something which is very significant to understanding our Gemara and Daf Yud Beis. It's really the other half of the sentence. It's very important context. So the Mishnah says, in Lamed Aleph and Aleph, Nafla Sakin V'Shachta. So let's say the Sakin fell, without trying to describe exactly how that happens, because we'll see it is a topic of Machlokas. But somehow the knife fell, V'Shachta, and Shechted an animal. Afal pi sheshachta kedarka, even if other details of the shechita are acceptable, psula, it is disqualified, shenamar vizavachta v'achalta, ma sheata zeveyoch ata ochel. So your achila has got to be a function of a zvicha. Now, before you see any Gemara, right, and just listening to that Mishnah, so what is the Mishnah telling you? That there's a din of a zavachta, and that din means that if it fell out of your hand, it's not good. So separating it from the story and formulating it as an abstract din, what is the din of a zavachta, according to the Mishnah?
Sam? The animal which you yourself shecht.
You yourself as opposed to someone else? So that's interesting, right? You know, that the word of ata could sound like that, but we know it's not true, right? And so then we know that as much as the language would be more compatible with that, but it doesn't follow practice. Okay, so then maybe what it sounds like, if all I have is this Mishnah, so Sam is right on both fronts. He's right that this drasha is interestingly formed, masha ata zaveh, ata ochel, that the emphasis could have sounded like that, but we know this for sure doesn't mean that because it doesn't match up halacha at all. But the din that the Gemara associates with it, it sounds like it's about kavana, or it sounds like if the knife just dropped, then there's no kavana, that's not called a zvicha. So just reading the Mishnah, and as we'll see, reading some of the Gemara, that would be a very understandable interpretation to have, that that's the din of the Mishnah that requires kavana. So let's look at the Gemara a little bit. So taima denafla. So the issue here seems to be that it fell passively without your intention. Ha hipila hu ksheira. But if you yourself forced it to fall, caused it to fall, so then it should be kosher. V'af al gav deloy mechave. So even though you don't need kavana. So here the Gemara is assuming that, let's be more specific, that the emphasis is the lack of you doing something. But if you did something, but your kavana was not for something, well, here we have to be vague because that's also going to be subject of a dispute, because I think we have to very carefully translate that phrase, because hahipila seems to be suggesting that you intentionally caused it to fall. And yet we're calling that lo mechaven. So what do we mean lo mechaven? We mean you weren't mechaven for something more than that. What more? We'll also have to see. But so for a very vague translation here, says the Gemara, apologetics for how vaguely we have to translate it, that if it fell by itself, no good. If you caused it to fall, apparently it's good, even though you didn't intend something more. So man tana delo payin kavana l'shchita. So who is it who says you don't need kavana for shchita? So Amar Rav Nosson, right? So this is Rav Nosson. We know from our Gemara, the same Rav Nosson. Ditana oshia zira de ben chavraya zarek sakin lenotza bekosal our Gemara v'halcha v'shachta kedarik Rav Nosson machshu v'chavim posla. So who tani lavu amrla halachah Rav Nosson? V'ha'amar Rava chad zimna, d'tana, didn't Rava say, d'tana, v'chum, sh'shachta v'chem rosa, n'shchitas n'ksherin, v'amrina, mantana lo bari kavala shchita, v'arav inasanib. So why do we need all this? So it's richa, diash minin hasam, mishum d'cha mechavein l'shum chaticha v'oilam. That there, at least we know, that he's intending to do some cutting. Aval hacha d'lo cha mechavein emelo. But maybe here, where there's no intention of cutting. So you might say no. And if we only have this Gemara, so you might think that it's because of, at least it comes from the power of somebody of Das. But there, that it was not the case, so tricha. So that's why we need both. So here, what the Gemara is bringing up here, that there is an extra word that we might be interested in, right? The issue of koach of a ben das, which introduces a whole other idea. And while introducing that, or on the way to introducing that, so the Gemara also says that you might think it's significant if a person didn't intend to cut at all, didn't intend to cut anything. So it sounds like the intention that would be significant to us is at least to have some kind of cutting. That's what Kavanas Shchita is. But we mentioned, I think the other day, Tosfos in a bunch of places, Tosfos here and Tosfos on Yudbeis and Midbeis and Tosfos on Yudgimel and Aleph. So if you look at, let's say, the last line of Tosfos here, so Tosfos says, "Rabbanan hidalo boy kavana lezvicha lechaticha mihaboy." He must have kavana for cutting. So what does that mean? So Tosfos says, "Haynu lechaticha simonim." What we're talking about is the cutting of the simonim that defines shchita. That's a significant point, because it sounds like from the Gemara that Kavana could just mean cutting, and here Tosfos is saying cutting the Simanim. If you look at the Rashba over here, the Rashba on this Gemara, he says it even less dramatically than this. He basically just edits the word Simanim into the Gemara. And so when he refers to this Gemara, he says Chaticha Simanim. So it's a pretty significant difference. And I think we mentioned yesterday that the Ramban doesn't require that. Ramban understands it, which is the Pashtus Lashon of the Gemara here, that Kavana is just Kavana to cut. So what's the more logical possibility? So I would have thought that Tosfos and the Rashba are the more logical possibility. Because even though the text doesn't work as well, doesn't mention Simanim, but in order to have a Kashrus Shchita, you need to have Kashrus Simanim. So that is what the Maisa is. So it makes sense to say, okay, as long as we know they intend to do that action of Shchita, which isn't simply killing an animal, but is killing an animal in a specific way, so as long as we know he tends to do that, so then we can talk about whether that's sufficient or not. But kavana to cut, that's not shchita by definition, why should that help us at all? Why should it help us that he had kavana to cut if it wasn't to cut the siman? So to try to understand that, we have to go a little further in the Gemara. So let's skip over to Amud Beis. Here, so just we won't read all the lines, but let's pick up from to the bottom third of the page. So see the line that begins Hipila. Amrinan man tana leboy kavana l'shchita Rav Nosson hevi b'shchita afilu Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef midigali rachmana mesasek b'kadshim pasul Michlal dechulin loy ba'in kavana. So for the fact that the Torah tells us that when it comes to kachin, misasek is not sufficient, and we spoke yesterday a little bit about the fact that shechita, that when it comes to kachin, we need to have lishma intent. Although we do say that stama is lishma, we see that misasek is no good. So the position of Rav Nosson is apparently that misasek is only a problem in kachin, but chulin is not. V'rabbanan nihi d'lo be'inan kavana l'zvicha l'chaticha be'inan. And then the Gemara goes on to say, "The Amar Rava b'Hazak Nino Rabbi Nosson l'Rabbanan Miksi v'Chatachta v'Zavachtik Siv Ibo Inan Kavana l'Chaticha Afilu Zvicha Nami Liboy Ilo Bini Kavana l'Zvicha l'Chaticha Nami Lo Liboy." So then the Gemara essentially raises that question: that what reason would there be to split things in the middle and say to have Kavana for Chaticha, but not for Zvicha? Seems like that's where. That's where Rabbi Nosson has the upper hand. Doesn't make sense to split it and to say that, yes, it needs chaticha, but not zvicha. So this introduces yet another element, that we are somehow deriving something from kachim. We see that kachim has a higher standard, and that tells us that chulin is not treated that way. Now, what do we mean by chulin? So it sounds like, from many of the sources, that by chulin, we don't mean Maseches chulin and mitzvah of shechita. We mean all of chulin, all of non-kachim. In other words, all mitzvahs. Mitzvahs in general, maybe, are derived here. And it's interesting, the Rashba, and Daf Lamed Aleph and Aleph, the Rashba questions, when we say that Nafla is no good, but Hipila maybe should be good. So what do we mean by Hipila? Does Hipila mean because a person throws it, essentially? Or do we mean that, no, it doesn't have to be any more intentional than anything else. It means that just if he drops it, then it means that at least it's from his action somehow. As opposed to what then? So what is Nafla? Sorry? So
it's just like fell somehow.
So fell somehow, maybe from the wind. That's what Rashba says. Let's say if the wind blows it off, so then it fell. But if it fell from your hand, maybe that's still called a mice of a person. And he draws the comparison, and for those of you who were here last year learning Bava Kamma, you might find it a surprising comparison. But he says this is comparable to the Gemara in Bava Kamma, that if somebody is asleep and he has a rock, somebody puts a rock on his chest, doesn't even know it's there, and then he gets up and the rock falls off and does hezek, so he's liable. So, yeah.
So he wasn't liable.
No, so he is liable for that. So the question is, so yeah, sorry for the damage, but so... The question is that an obvious comparison? Besides the din being surprising by itself. But could you question that comparison on some level? Well, if you were learning Bava Kamma last year, so you may recall that there wasn't as much of a standard for liability by Nezikin as there is in other things. That here we're trying to establish what's considered to be an action. And by Nezikin, it doesn't really matter because a person is liable just for his responsibility if it connects to him somehow. If you recall, it was a big machlokas Rishonim, if something is ones gomer, something mamish is completely out of your hands. So then it's a machlokas if you're patur. But half ones, or an ones kein geneva, then the Gemara says a person is chayiv even for ones. So it's a pretty low standard in terms of what's an action. So the possibility of comparing this to that is interesting, striking. So certainly to compare it to anything beyond Shechita is interesting, so, but that we find from other Rishonim also. That the Gemara seems to be saying that this is something which has relevance. It's not just about this, it's about all mitzvos. And even about dinim, which may seem to be outside that scope. Or maybe you could say that that's telling us that shlita is no more of a standard than mitzvahs in general, and even comparable to a standard of nezikin. Where as long as it's not completely out of your control, maybe we will call it your maisa. Now, it's also important to remember, if we're going to go as far as connecting to nezikin, because this will also be relevant to that next sugya, that later sugya. So, on the one hand, nezikin, you're chayiv for an ones, but you're pater for a grama. Meaning that it sounds like we're less concerned about whether you intended to cause something than we are concerned about whether you are connected to it. So if we can connect it to you directly, even loosely, then you're chayiv. But if you cause it, there's something in between, so then you'd be pater. So that may end up being a relevant structure for shchit also. So that's also something to keep in mind. Now, the next part of this Gemara, just to skip around a little bit also, but I don't have to necessarily read any more lines, but the idea that this is connected to Misaseh is also interesting. Because we have to put into this whole puzzle what exactly is the role of Misaseh. What does Misaseh mean in general? So, misasek, which we find both in the context of mitzvos and averos. So, misasek, let's say we generally translate it as you're just involved in your day and you're not focused on what you're doing. So, if we're looking at an avera, so we call that not even a shogeg. If a person does an avera, so then he's liable for the extent that he has to bring a carbon. Doesn't get punished, mamish, with an onesh, but there's a consequence that there needs to be some kind of a remedy, so there has to be a kapara in the form of a carbon. Misasek is less than that. So if somebody is misasek, he doesn't have to bring a carbon either. He doesn't need a kapara. We talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Behemton and Shul Tzadikim. So does that mean that it's mamish nothing? Misasek is garnished? That's how the Nesivus understands. The Nesivus in the Makor Chaim, Sefer on Hilchos Pesach. So the Nesivus understands that when it comes to Misasek, there isn't any avera there at all. But Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in a tshuva, it's often quoted in Siman Ches, Rabbi Akiva Eiger understands that it is an avera. It's just such a low level of involvement that it doesn't require any kind of a kapara. But it is something that would be an avera. This, we mentioned Behemton Shul Tzadikim, this could perhaps be relevant to the question of, let's say you know somebody else is going to do something in a category of misasik. Are you obligated to stop them? Should we say that misasik is mamish nothing, so there's really no value even to stopping them? Or should we say that, no, the person's not going to bear any liability, but there's still some aveira happening, and therefore you should want to stop the aveira. So this is relevant to us because if we're excluding misasek from shchita, so then what is the deficiency in misasek? Or if we're actually, if we're excluding misasek from kudshim and saying that misasek could be okay for shchita, so then what is misasek? Is misasek not even an action? Or is it an action that isn't so significant, doesn't carry liability when it's an aveira? But maybe at least at some level of an action. So what emerges, we're running out of time, what emerges to raise the issue that we asked before we read the Mishnah. So when you started to read the Mishnah, so you would think that the issue in the Mishnah is, what kind of kavana do you or don't you need for shchita? But when we get further into this Gemara interpreting the Mishnah, the din of zavachta is not necessarily about kavana. Seems like it's really about a maisa. That shchita has to be a maisa. And if you are so disconnected, then maybe that's not even called a maisa. And that could be relevant. I think someone started to suggest yesterday that could be relevant to the machlokas about whether you need chaticha simanim or whether you need kavana for chaticha simanim or kavana just for chaticha. Because for the simanim, we understand that's what shchita is. But what's the point of saying just chaticha and not simanim? Perhaps that's the point, right? That at least we have to call it an action. So if there's no awareness of any kind of cutting, then we can't even call it the maisa of a person. Now this is all going to directly connect to the sugi we want to see soon, of what's called koach gavra, what isn't, what exactly is called an action. So that's going to very much connect to this. But in between, I want to do maisa Shabbos, so let's try to talk about that tomorrow. I'll give you makaris for that. But I guess we're out of time now. There are maybe one or two other points I want to make about this sugya before moving on. So we'll try to do both of those things tomorrow. We'll just start off with one or two other haras about this. And then move into Maisa Shabbos. And then we'll have Parsha. And then by Sunday, Monday, hopefully get to that last sugya and then begin Chazar. All right. So wish everybody a fantastic day.